to fuel you to the next frustration you encounter. That's when you rinse and repeat again and again. That is how you FLIP flip the gratitude switch. Remember, it is through the simple, daily, conscious decision to activate gratitude during the most frustrating times of the day that you can change the entire trajectory of your life. Are you ready to F, find the frustration, L, look for what's awesome, I, initiate gratitude, and P, power up with Gratifuel? Well, the next four chapters are dedicated to each one of the steps so that you can understand each part of the flip formula more completely. Now, let's move on to part three and go in depth on each of the steps of the flip formula. By the way, if you want to download a one-page flip formula hot sheet or cheat sheet for a quick reference, visit flipthegratitudeswitch.com/cheat sheet. That's FLIPTHEGRATITUDESWITCH.com/CHEATSHEET. flipthegratitudeswitch.com/cheat sheet, and you can download one for free. Part 3, the flip formula. Now that you've seen the potential that exists by learning and using the active power of gratitude and flipping the gratitude switch, in part 3, we will dissect and digest each step of the flip formula and, perhaps most importantly, learn how to start flipping the gratitude switch on a regular, consistent, and daily basis, especially during life's most frustrating moments. Chapter 1. F. Find the frustration. My two sons really love dinosaurs. We play with them a lot in our home, and during our play, I've discovered something crazy. Now, you may not know this, but not all of the dinosaurs are extinct. Yes, one species of dinosaur lives on. Its name is the Not-Good-Enoughosaurus. Not-Good-Enoughosaurus is a dinosaur that is more destructive than a hungry T-Rex, but it is found only in the unique climate created in the words you say and the thoughts you proliferate. Let me give you a list of some of the thoughts and words that create the perfect climate for the Not-Good-Enoughosaurus to thrive. I'm starving.
I ate too much.
This house is so drafty. Our house isn't big enough to entertain. I'll never find my true love.
I found love, but I wish they would change.
It's too hot. Ooh, I wish it were warmer. Could it be any colder out there? Oh, I hate driving in the rain. I just wish we could get some rain. There is not enough time. Ugh, I'm too busy. You know, my car isn't nice enough. New cars are so expensive these days. The dishwasher is loud. We don't even have a dishwasher. I don't really own my house. The bank does. Renting is so expensive. Food is so expensive. Healthy food is really expensive. They raised the prices on the value menu again. My spouse never acknowledged that nice thing I did. My spouse doesn't treat me the way I deserve to be treated. I have no control. It's not my fault. Republicans are idiots. Democrats are idiots. Why me? It's not fair. That list could go on for a long time, couldn't it? We could fill a library with books overflowing with negative feelings, statements of lack, and complaints. Notice that a lot of the statements were different sides of the same coin, and yet both were negative statements. It was too hot, now it's too cold. We tend to view the world through the lenses of limitation. We love to commiserate together over all the bad, and misery loves company. You know, maybe it is as Les Brown described, and maybe we're either in a problem, getting out of one, or heading to the next one. Or maybe, just maybe, all of that stuff, all of those challenges are only problems because that is how we choose to perceive them. Guess what? Here's the good news. You don't have to view life in those terms. You choose to view life in those terms, which means that you can also choose a different, happier, more satisfying reality. You can make the Not-Good-Enoughosaurus become extinct by shifting the words you use to describe your life as you live it. A losing argument. No matter what lens you choose, there is one certainty in life, and it is this. Throughout each and every day, you will inevitably encounter frustrations both big and small. What you may not know is that those seemingly little frustrations may culminate into the feeling that your entire life is headed in the wrong direction. Most of the frustrations we deal with are minor occurrences that compound over time and lead us to believe that life is hard. When someone says, "I had such a bad day," did this feeling stem from some life-altering trouble? I mean, maybe. But more often than not, this conclusion comes from the accumulation of multiple tiny frustrations. Here's how it normally works. You stub your toe getting out of bed. You get frustrated and you feel the anger monster awaken in your gut. And as a result, you snap at your spouse. Your son yells or your daughter complains and you snap at your kids. Now the kids are crying and your spouse is giving you the silent treatment. You limp into the bathroom, you know, because you just stubbed your toe. Look in the mirror and think, "Ugh, terrible." As you declare your dissatisfaction with your reflection, you notice a new gray hair and now you're livid. Oh, and you've only been up for like 10 minutes. Or maybe your frustrations compound like this. You go downstairs to discover you're out of milk, diapers, or toilet paper, and your partner was the last one to use the item without replacing it. Rather than viewing it as a small and insignificant little thing, you go online and proclaim to Facebook, "Can I catch a break already?" You then take a selfie with an exasperated look and post it on Instagram with the caption, "What a crappy Monday." Later that day, someone asks, "How are you?" And you reply, "To be honest, things could be better." In either scenario, you are caught in an argument that is impossible to win. You are in an argument with reality. In one of my favorite books called Loving What Is, author Byron Katie says the following. She says, "When you argue with reality, you lose, but only 100% of the time." We've all heard that overused phrase, "It is what it is." Well, it's true. It actually is what it is. And frankly, you can't do anything about it because it already is. What you can do is use a proven process like the flip formula to deal with reality, with what already is, and do some work on the internal turmoil you may be facing. When you try to change what's already happened, it never works. You can only change how you react to what's happened and what you do next. Think of how often we express that something should have gone one way but didn't, or that something could have happened another way but it didn't. As long as we live in a state of perpetual dissatisfaction with what already is, we can never really create the awesome reality we actually want. We really do need to stop shoulding on ourselves. See what I did there? Shoulding on ourselves? Okay, I'm going back to the script. I wonder what a verbal argument with reality would sound like. I imagine it would start like this. "Hey, reality, I don't like your face." Okay, fine, but that won't change reality's face. Reality's face will remain the same. You can close your eyes and not look at reality, or you can accept that its face is its face, and you can instead find something about that face that is attractive or pleasant in some way. That's what the flip formula can do for you. It can take you from frustration to liberation, so that reality is not something to be argued with, but rather something to celebrate and feel gratitude for, regardless of what that reality looks like at any given moment. The driving force behind the flip. The power behind the flip formula boils down to personal accountability. And that accountability starts by acknowledging the frustration as soon as it shows up. You, quote, find the frustration by becoming present and aware of its existence, as opposed to letting it sweep you down the river of disappointment, at which point your only option is to climb out miles down river, dripping with discontent and wondering how in the world you got there. The point of finding the frustration is to take a moment to acknowledge that a frustration exists, then to take that new acknowledgement and use it as a way to do some work on it. When a frustration, disappointment, or challenge arises, take a moment to become aware and accountable. Become aware of that feeling and then become accountable by awakening to the fact that you have the power to change how you feel. When the anger monster awakens, you must wake up and become conscious to the fact that something is rousing within. When you find the frustration, acknowledge that it exists and become aware that it is affecting you, then you immediately create the power to do something about it. I like to say that you give frustration a proverbial high five when it shows up and acknowledge it for what it is. Then you take some simple actions in order to flip that frustration into something awesome through the power of active gratitude. No cord, big, no problem. In the midst of writing this book, I was scheduled to drive to Los Angeles for a marketing event and a mastermind group meeting. I booked the entire trip to last a week, cleverly giving myself some extra days after the meetings to feverishly work on my book, beautifully undisturbed, in my hotel room. Upon arriving in LA, I had some time that evening before the first event started the following day, so I decided to spend a few minutes emitting gratitude gold onto my computer. I popped open my laptop, and there it was. My battery icon was glowing red and imploring, "Feed me!" The battery was almost dead. No problem, right? That's what power cords are for. Woefully, I quickly discovered that my power cord had not made the journey with me to Los Angeles. It dawned on me that I was about to spend 7 days of my life with no laptop on which to work, write, and constantly post how grateful I was on Facebook. I was bugged. I mean, really bugged. The hotel was already paid for, and I did not want to shell out another $85 for a Mac power cord. I mean, look, I already own two of them, and they were both probably sitting at home mocking me from a distance. I began to conclude that I'd just head home after the events and abandon my brilliant plan to spend quality time on my book. This meant I was going to miss some deadlines, which made me even more frustrated. I know there are people out there with real problems in the world, and this wasn't one of them. Hashtag first world problems, right? But allow me to dive into this frustration a little. I'd already been working on this book for quite some time, and I'd set deadlines in order to get the manuscript into the hands of the people who were helping me get it polished, edited, designed, and printed. My next deadline was just a few short days away. In fact, I was supposed to email the completed draft to my amazing writer friend Jen, shout out to Jen, before I went back to Utah. Now, Jen can tell you that deadlines and I don't exactly have a healthy relationship, especially not during the process of creating this book, but I really wanted to meet at least one deadline during the 6 months I'd already taken to write this book. I thought this trip to LA might have been my one quiet, perfect opportunity. Nope. As I sat there pondering my options, I picked up my phone, only to discover its battery was also on life support. Sadly, it was destined to die alongside my laptop since I had apparently also forgotten to pack my phone charger. Wait, so let me get this straight. No phone, no laptop, no way to type anything. I mean, come on, how was I supposed to enter the annals of nonfiction legend without anything to type on? I mean, how could I create the scholarly, personal development version of Michelangelo's David without a laptop? Regardless of whether or not such a small problem should have been annoying and frustrating, I could not escape the fact that the predicament I was in was also completely and totally my fault. To make matters worse, the moment in which I discovered that I was regrettably cordless was at about 11 p.m. after an exhausting 13-hour traffic-laden drive. To add insult to injury, my blood sugar was also low due to the diet I was on at the time, you know, to lose the spare tire I'd been sporting for the past few years. It could have all stacked up to be one of those heart-wrenching, remote-control-throwing, wall-kicking exclamations of frustration. But then I did the one thing I'm teaching you to do in this very book. I took my own advice and I put the flip formula into action. I could have chosen to let it all get to me. I could have also chosen to blame something or someone else for the situation. After all, my son Brody had been crying as I was packing my laptop bag that morning. I could have so easily shifted the burden of responsibility by saying, if Brody hadn't cried, then I wouldn't have had to go change him. In fact, if my wife had been up at 6 a.m., then she could have handled it, and I wouldn't have gotten distracted and forgotten the cord. Blah, blah, blah. Sounds a lot like man number two from A Tale of Two Men, wouldn't you say? If I'd become man number two in that moment, where would it have gotten me? Would it have changed the fact that the cords were not there? No. Could the feelings of frustration and anger have powered up my computer and phone? No. Would getting mad put me in a better state of mind to write a book on how to acquire unlimited happiness and control over your feelings? That, my friends, is an unequivocal no. What does the choice to feel the frustration, anger, and annoyance get anyone? It gets them absolutely nothing but anger, frustration, and annoyance. It all boils down to a choice made in a single instant. I stopped and took an immediate inventory of my life. I don't have a cord. I have a book to write. Okay. And that was all. I could either buy a new cord or accept that I wouldn't get any writing done on the trip. It's that simple. It simply is exactly what it is, so why fight it? The process of becoming angry and arguing with reality is the opposite of what should be done when using the flip formula. Becoming aware of the frustration and then acknowledging and isolating it so you can go to work on it and move past it in a healthy, productive way is how we can change our moments, change our days, and ultimately change our lives. Small problems remain small. Big problems are put into perspective, and you get to stay happy, fueled by gratitude for every win as well as every struggle. By the way, the conclusion of that story is actually pretty good. The next morning when I powered my drained iPhone back on, the remaining 8% of battery power was just enough to help me find an Apple retail store just a few miles away from the hotel. I went to the parking garage, hopped in my car, and with my dangerously drained Apple iPhone battery, I used the trusty GPS to navigate the busy streets of LA to the Apple store, and arrived at the Apple store just before my 1% power turned into a black iPhone screen. I walked into the Apple retail store and bought a new cord. When I walked in the store, at first I thought it was my gratitude switch flipping, energetic, sparkling, and hopelessly happy personality that prompted the Apple Store sales associate to tell me that within 15 days I could return the power cord undamaged with my original receipt and get a full refund. So you know what? I used the cord for the days I needed it and returned it, no problem. Walked back out of the store, cash in hand. I came to find out that apparently they give that return policy to all Apple customers. It wasn't just because I was unbelievably happy. It was not just my cheery position alone that prompted such stellar customer service. Nonetheless, thank you, Apple. Actually, you know what kind of gives me an idea? If you're listening, hold on 1 second. Dear Apple, I'm completely open to accepting any and all free Apple products you would like to ship to me as a way to show your gratitude for me sharing my amazing Apple story in this book. Sincerely, a very loyal and happy Apple customer. Just email me and I'll give you all the address details. Moments create lifetimes. Life is a collection of moments. Good ones, bad ones, big ones, small ones, painful ones, and exquisite ones. And I propose that if life truly is nothing more than a collection of moments, it means you can change the trajectory of your life instantly by acknowledging how you show up for life in this exact moment. Flipping the gratitude switch allows us to determine the outcome of this life. It also allows you and me to more fully express the splendor in beautiful moments, because gratitude illuminates everything. Because gratitude illuminates, it also allows us to navigate the dark times of life. Flipping the gratitude switch is the formula for never having a bad day again. Let me just pause and repeat that, okay? Because I want to make sure you really understand this. The flip formula and flipping the gratitude switch is the formula so that you never ever have to have a bad day again. Just real quick, I jump off script. I just had a conversation where I'm recording this book out in the hallway with somebody who was going through kind of a tough day. And I shared the flip formula with her and I said, do you understand what I just gave you? I just gave you the formula for never ever having to have a bad day again, because life is just broken down into moments and you can take one tiny frustrating moment and do some work on it, flip the gratitude switch and you're off to the races. It changes the trajectory of your day the moment you flip the gratitude switch, the very second a frustration shows up. She said, hey, wow, boy, I really wish you could write all that down for me. I said, I've got a book. Okay, back to the script. If you don't ever let another frustrating moment dictate your mood or your day, then that means you can compound all of those moments that you flip and create an existence that is filled with joy, contentment, and happiness. An existence where you have total control over your mood, your day, and ultimately your life. You are the only one responsible for how you react to your reality. Let me ask you this question. Would you rather choose to view life as a series of events where you're in control and you can use the flip formula to immediately experience significantly more joy? Or do you forfeit control of your life as you sit and stew in self-pity and perceived victimhood? I hope the answer is crystal clear. Real life stuff. Let's take a look at a few other examples of the many tiny frustrations you experience each day. I want you to become hyper aware of the tiny little nothings that are affecting everything. Here are some examples. You can't find a close parking spot. The soda pop machine is out of your favorite flavor. The vending machine ate a quarter and didn't give it back. There's a long line at the bank. Your child does not make his or her bed when asked. There are dirty dishes piled up, but your spouse is firmly planted on the couch. The client you thought was a guaranteed buyer just fell through. Traffic. All of it. The price of gas went up again. Your DVR was set to record your favorite show, but it didn't record. Your favorite team lost. The toilet paper roll didn't get replaced, and you're staring, pants down, at the dreaded roll of empty cardboard. You burned the chicken because you got distracted making the salad. You trip over your cord. I could go on all day, but hopefully you get the idea. It can be almost anything in the world so long as it causes you the briefest moment of frustration. Of course, there are big things too. They absolutely cannot be overlooked. Traffic accidents can be big things. A terminal disease in you or a loved one is a major thing. Losing that loved one, that's even harder. Losing your job can also be life-altering. The end of a relationship can be heartbreaking. It can be anything, big or small, that is causing you pain or frustration. Look, while the primary purpose of this book is to teach you that the constant stream of daily frustrations is the largest root cause for most people's misery and dissatisfaction, I mean, if you haven't cultivated the practice of flipping the gratitude switch with the small things, it will be impossible to correctly use the flip formula on the big things. In other words, master the small things and the tiny frustrations first, and it will give you power to control and master the big things when those show up. Why? Because it is in the tiny moments of frustration where the seeds of anger are planted and the evolution of annoyance begins. And it's in those exact moments that the flip formula and the process of flipping the gratitude switch can be the most impactful and powerful. The small, almost unconscious reactions that we have each day to our micro frustrations are what will determine our level of happiness and contentment, regardless of present circumstances. And when you consciously choose gratitude, you consciously choose to create a happy life. In order to master the flip, F-L-I-P, you first need to become proficient at being aware of the frustrating moments in life, even the tiniest ones. And as soon as you recognize them, alarm bells should go off in your mind, reminding you that it's time to flip the gratitude switch. In each of life's moments, you are given the gift of choice. You can choose how to react. When you find the frustration in a moment and recognize it for what it is, it can become a beautiful gift, and it can become the foundation for the incredible, happy, and satisfying life you deserve. Don't ignore those insignificant irritations. Acknowledge them. Give them a high five. Greet them with love, and realize you have some work to do on them. You don't have to live your life in a state of perpetual pessimism. You don't have to stay crouched and ready to battle the next problem waiting to ignite the moment you put out today's fire. That's what step one is all about. Find the frustration. Find a frustration the moment it materializes and call it out. Once you find and acknowledge those frustrations, you get to start taking action on them. That action is introduced in the next step, which is called L, look for what's awesome. And guess what? There is always plenty of awesome. Chapter 2, L, look for what's awesome. Feeling good about and having gratitude for things that are already awesome is important, but it also doesn't require any effort, and it definitely doesn't require any sort of mental shift. Popular activities like keeping gratitude journals, making gratitude jars, and going on gratitude walks are all good behaviors, and I encourage you to try such practices and see how they feel for you. Just be aware that the weakness with those approaches rests in the fact that they require you to give thanks for things you already consider awesome. Flipping the gratitude switch requires you to look for what's awesome in your current circumstances, whatever they may be. This means that you must look for the good in things that, up until now, have done nothing but cause you irritation, grief, anger, or pain. I know, it's a tough concept for some people to accept. There's an amazing story that perfectly illustrates this idea. It's a story about two sisters during World War II, as told by a Nazi concentration camp survivor, Corrie Ten Boom. She and her sister Betsy were arrested and thrown into the notorious camp called Ravensbrück for helping hide Jews in the Netherlands during World War II. In her book, The Hiding Place, Corrie recounted an amazing story of gratitude that paints one of the most beautiful pictures of finding the good within the bad that I've ever heard. Soon after arriving at Ravensbrück, the women were horrified to discover that their living quarters, Barracks 28, was swarming with fleas. Upon discovering this, here was Corey's response. "Fleas? I jumped down to the floor. The place is crawling with fleas. I don't know how I can cope with living in such a terrible place." Her sister Betsy assured her that God had already given them the answer for how to handle the fleas, which was to give thanks without ceasing. She said to her sister, "Come on, Corrie, let's try. What are we thankful for?" Corrie did her best to list things she was grateful for, things like being able to hide her Bible from the guards and being together with her sister when other families had been totally separated. That's when Betsy added this, "And thank you, God, for the fleas." Corrie thought her sister was crazy. There was no way she could ever be thankful for something as awful as fleas. Here's how it goes in the book. "No, Betsy, I can't thank God for the fleas. There's nothing good about them." "Well, we'll just have to wait and see," my sister answered. The women went out every morning at 4:30 a.m. to start their 11-hour workday. They were fed just enough food to keep them breathing. The only thing they ever looked forward to was reading their smuggled Bible to the women in Barracks 28 at night. The sisters knew they would be killed if the Bible got discovered, so they kept a watchful eye for guards every night during their reading. I'll let Corrie tell the rest of the story. "But day after day passed, and no guards came into Barracks 28. Soon we read the Bible twice a day, and more women listened. No one bothered us. One day, Betsy grabbed my arm and whispered, 'I know why no one has bothered our Bible studies. I overheard some of the guards talking. None of them wants to come into Barracks 28 because of the fleas.' I wanted to laugh. 'All right, Lord, thank you for the fleas.'" It's truly an awe-inspiring story. Approaching gratitude in this way takes your gratitude game to the next level. When you do find the awesome embedded in the frustrations of life, it's significantly harder, which, by the way, makes the practice of flipping the gratitude switch significantly more rewarding as a result. Because, by the way, you and I know that sometimes the hardest things are also the most rewarding when we achieve them. The awesome needle in the haystack of frustration. In each moment that comes your way, both good and bad, you've got options. You really do have the power. You are the one who has the final say as to whether life is going to be painful, dull, and gray, or joyful, exciting, and full of vibrant color. Every formula is only as good as its next step. I mean, you can mix in the flour, eggs, and butter, but if you don't put the mix in the oven, you won't be eating any brownies. Even though you may become really skilled at the first step of the foot formula to find the frustration, the whole recipe hinges on this next step. The gratitude switch cannot be flipped until you look for what's awesome. We're going to do a few practice runs at finding the awesome. In them, I will show you how to take a frustration and find the good. And guess what? There's always good. So how does this work? It's pretty straightforward. After we acknowledge and isolate the frustration, we must find some way that the annoyance, trial, or tribulation is awesome, and even a blessing. Just like how the fleas, normally a giant painful nuisance, became a blessing for Corrie and Betsy. It is in this step that you begin to physically flip that gratitude switch. Let's take a look at some of the items from the list of the daily hardships in the last chapter. These were some of the everyday experiences that may be affecting our day without our knowledge or really our permission. We're going to call them out and then dissect them to discover the shards of awesome embedded within each one. Any one of these common occurrences could cast a shadow on the entire day and trigger a negative ripple effect that reaches not just your day, but also the days of your family, friends, and coworkers. That is why, when you take the moment after you find the frustration to discover what is awesome, you effectively begin charting a new course for your mood, your day, and your life. So let's run through the examples from the last chapter, and let's find the awesome in each of them. You can't find a close parking spot. This one happens to all of us at some point. Really, you've just been handed a great opportunity to burn a few extra calories. Even better, next time, don't look for a spot close to the building. Instead, make a conscious decision to park further away. Get out of your car and start walking with a purpose, thinking about how amazing it is that you can fit a few more steps into your day and give your heart and legs a mini workout. Awesomehood achieved. The soda machine is out of your favorite flavor. I used to love root beer as a kid, but at some point in my life, we grow up and move on to more, you know, mature drinks like Mountain Dew and Diet Coke. Well, if that machine is out of a Diet Coke, consider this your inner child's way of telling you it wants root beer. You might even experience a little nostalgia as you take that first sip. This could also be an opportunity to step outside your soda pop comfort zone and try a new flavor. Who knows? You may discover a new favorite. Better yet, opt for a bottle of water and realize how remarkable it is that life handed you a reminder to be healthier. Lastly, maybe the real awesome is that you live in a world that allows you to place little pieces of metal into a machine that dispenses refreshment. What a blessing that you have enough pieces of metal money to buy a drink in the first place. It's more than many folks have. Awesome sauce, a discovered. There's a long line at the bank. Okay, look, this is a tough one for me at times. I have to remind myself that I'm a business owner, an entrepreneur, and someone who really believes in free market principles. Because I believe in free market principles, I always love it now when I see someone who has a job. Businesses can't hire if they're not profitable. If businesses don't have customers, then they have no way to turn a profit. If there's a long line at the bank, then I just think of how awesome it is that the establishment has so many customers, because it means that more money is being made and injected into society, which means that more jobs have been created, which means that more families are able to provide for themselves. You know what? I'm good with that. All of a sudden, a long line turns from a source of frustration into a symbol of prosperity, and I feel great that I have enough prosperity to either deposit the check I have in my hand or take cash out. Not only is the business profitable, but I am as well. You have just been awesomed. Your child does not make his or her bed when asked. The first and most obvious awe-inspiring newsflash, you have kids. What a blessing. It can be so easy to let the daily grind of parenthood become fraught with frustration. Sometimes it may feel hard to look for the good embedded in that parental mayhem. You have children, and they are alive and have the ability to make their bed, regardless of whether they do it when they're asked. I think of all the friends who've lost children or haven't been able to have children, and I think about family or friends who have amazing special needs children who won't ever be able to make their own beds. When I think of them, I instantly realize how blessed my wife and I are to have healthy, able-bodied kids. When cooler heads prevail and you can communicate clearly and calmly with your children to help them understand why it helps the family to have them make their bed, they are significantly more likely to eventually do it. In my experience, when I stew in the frustration and lash out, my kids rarely ever fix the behavior in question. Be cool. The fact that you have a home and beds for your kids is reason enough to celebrate.
Hello. Mr. and Mrs. Awesome, your table is ready. Please follow me.
There are dirty dishes in the sink, but your spouse is firmly planted on the couch. My wife can totally relate to this one, since it was I, you know, the firmly planted one, for many years. I consider this often because we have had the ability, even during the lean times, to abundantly feed our children. Our children have never been hungry a day in their lives. That line of thought is so encouraging to me and causes me to reflect on how many do not have that ability. Yes, there are dishes to do, but only because we've been fed. When you think of it that way, it becomes easy to brush off frustration about a few plates and forks. If you're struggling with your spouse sitting firmly on the couch engrossed in the game instead of doing the dishes, my wife could offer you some insight on that one. She might say something like, "How awesome is it that he works hard for our family to put food on the table, and now he's bonding with the kids while watching the 49ers game." Little disclosure, my wife sounds nothing like that.
The representative from the Nation of Awesome has the floor.
The big deal that was guaranteed just fell through. If you are in any kind of sales position, and we all are, really, this one has happened. If it hasn't, then it will at some point. There's always a client that you will invest a ton of time in that ends up going elsewhere or not buying at all. This client may have assured you 100 times that they're sticking with you, but then something happens and they just don't. How could this possibly be awesome? For years, I conditioned myself to believe that each no I receive brings me one step closer to a yes. So if I get a no, and even if it came after investing a lot of my personal time, I get excited because I just took a big step towards my next yes. I also get an opportunity to reflect on what I could have done better during the sales process. Learning is so valuable, and I relish any opportunity to learn. Perhaps I can identify at what point in the process I should have helped the client take action, and now I can fix that going forward and improve my closing ratio in the future.
Have you heard this new group called the Awesomes? They are awesome.
Traffic. All of it. I moved to Utah in 2001, leaving behind the traffic-soaked freeways of the San Francisco Bay Area, and as a result, I've now become traffic-spoiled. There is rarely traffic in Utah, but when there is traffic, I still have to battle my inclination to have a mild conniption fit. When I drive to Los Angeles, a 10-hour drive often turns into a 13-hour drive because of traffic. At times, the interstates around LA basically become a parking lot. In the past, I've acted like many others who I've seen exit their cars and throw up their hands in pure exasperation. I've now learned to view traffic as purely awesome because it allows me to spend extra time in a climate-controlled vehicle where I can listen to books, podcasts, scriptures, and music. Many people complain that their hectic pace rarely gives them the opportunity to take a step back and have some time to themselves. Well, traffic does just that. If I get even one new idea from a book I'm listening to while sitting in traffic, it's all worth it. If traffic makes me late, I remind myself that traffic didn't make me late. I made me late by not anticipating the traffic and leaving early enough. It becomes a great lesson on the importance of punctuality. I also find the awesome in the fact that I have a car I can trust to not overheat in traffic. That is actually something that used to happen to me in college. By the way, don't forget that being stuck in traffic means that you have the ability to drive a car at all.
Yes, actually, that comes in two shades. Awesome, and really awesome.
The price of gas went up again.
I have no idea why I just had a country accent, but let's go with it.
The price of gas went up again.
Sometimes gas can get expensive. Pause for a moment and think about the feeling that something is expensive. What does that indicate? First of all, it's a clear sign that you have money. If you have no money, it's not expensive. It's just plain impossible. When gas increases in price, you notice because you've been buying gas. That means you have a car and you can actually afford to put gas in it. There are many millions in this world who could never even consider such a thing. If you are frustrated with the price of gas because you remember back when it cost less, this means you've owned a car for a while now. You get to enjoy a luxury that the majority of the world will never experience. And consider this, you actually have access to gasoline. You can drive up to a little pump and fuel up the vehicle that takes you to your job, to church, and to the kids' play dates or sports practice. So the awesome comes through the blessing of access. Prices go up and down. It's supply and demand. And yes, many prices go up and never come back down. You know, like admission prices to Disneyland. I can guarantee that many will be frustrated by such increases. What a luxury to be frustrated with such a small thing. If you're frustrated by the price increase of a Disneyland park pass, for example, it means you have the ability to go or even the ability to consider going to an amusement park.
Prosperity is a state of mind, and it's a state of mind you choose.
Hey, so what's the wait time for Awesome Mountain?
There's no line. Awesome.
Your team lost.
My wife will tell you that she has seen me become absolutely enraged when my favorite pro or college team lost to their arch rival. This one should be a no-brainer. I've had the luxury to be raised in a country where so many professional sporting events take place, and thanks to technology, I've been able to watch and track these teams. There'll always be other games, other seasons, and other championships. These days, I simply sit back, root for my team, and let a loss or a frustration melt away, realizing how awesome it is that I could even experience the game in the first place. I get mad, I react, maybe make a few comments on what I wish the team would have done better, but then take a deep breath and just let the gratitude flow with the hope and thought that the next game or season is just around the corner.
And the final score in overtime, 100 and awesome to 100 and awesome. Awesome wins!
Awesome ain't always easy. My hope is that the awesome found in each of those situations got you thinking about how you can program your thought process to work. As with anything worthwhile in life, it will take some practice. And if you've been practicing negative speak for many decades, the change may not happen overnight. But don't get discouraged. All you can do is actively choose to use the foot formula when you find yourself facing one of the many inevitable daily frustrations awaiting us all. Last year, I'd just given a talk to a group of parents and students, and an older woman approached me. She didn't look like she fit with the audience I'd just spoken to, which was primarily young kids and their parents, so I wondered why she was there. It turns out she'd heard a podcast interview about Flip the Gratitude Switch, and she'd researched me online and read most of my blog posts. When she discovered I'd be speaking near her town, she drove to see me. She showed up to ask me a really tough question. Her terminally ill mother's home had recently burned down. The woman was now battling on behalf of her mother with multiple insurance companies. She was battling with the medical side and the homeowner side because she felt the insurance companies were doing everything in their power to avoid paying the claims. This woman was beside herself. She was finding it next to impossible to flip the gratitude switch and look for something awesome within these major challenges. I offered a few ways that she might find some awesome. I started by saying, "Wow, gosh, I'm so sorry you're going through that. Let me see if I can help. Can you find the good in the fact that your mom has insurance at all?" She shook her head. "No, because the insurance companies aren't doing anything." "Okay, strike one." I tried again. "Well, can you find some good in the idea that your mother will eventually get a newly built home out of this terrible trial?" She frowned. "I don't think we will, because the insurance company is not working with us. Besides, she lives in a condo."
Strike two!
I wasn't going to be deterred. So I said, "I know your mother's in pain, and it seems like things aren't going well, but let me ask you this. Do you love her, and will you miss her when she's gone?" She solemnly replied, "Well, of course I love her, and I'll miss her." I said, "Then take advantage of every second of every day that you have left with her. The other stuff stinks, and it'll eventually work itself out. But in the meantime, can you try to be thankful for the moments you do get with her?" She responded and said, "Yeah, you know what? I guess I can." That brief conversation taught me a powerful lesson. Sometimes we can't control the big stuff. Things just happen. What we can control are the little moments surrounding the big stuff. We can find little moments to be thankful and to discover the awesome in some aspect of our life at the moment that the big stuff is happening. When you can become thankful in your current circumstances, and when you can practice flipping the gratitude switch consistently and regularly, when you become addicted to doing it for everything, that is when the big stuff somehow becomes easier to handle. The gravity of serious situations does not get diminished, but your capacity to interact with those situations and deal with them will improve drastically. Remember, it is through the simple, daily, conscious act of finding the frustration, then looking for what's awesome, that begins to lay the foundation for an entirely new way of looking at life. As you're going through this process, just know that the list of what's awesome doesn't need to be written down. You can do all of this in your head. And once you've obtained your list of the good, you will immediately move
from Look What's Awesome, which is step number 2, to the third step of the flip formula, where you take that list and do something really awesome and powerful with it. It's where you complete your verbification of gratitude. So how do we initiate the gratitude sequence with our mental list of awesome and do it in a way that will actually cause a real, lasting, and powerful internal shift? That leads us to the third step of the flip formula. I initiate gratitude. You're going to learn that we must actually initiate, activate, and then experience the quiet power of thank you in our hearts in order for the gratitude switch to truly be flipped. Chapter 3. I initiate gratitude. Have you ever considered how a world-class runner like Usain Bolt wins the 100-meter dash? Sure, there are years of preparation and practice and untold hours of running, but lots of people do those things and still never win gold medals. So how does he actually win? You ready for it? He crosses the finish line first. I know that seems like an oversimplification, but consider this for a moment. There is an instant in Usain Bolt's life when some part of his body physically crosses the finish line first that makes him the winner. Everything that came before laid the foundation for and contributed to his ability to win. But that single moment where he exerts the final bit of effort to cross the line first is arguably what counts the most. What if Usain Bolt put in all those years of preparation and the untold hours of mechanics and practice, but just 1 yard short of the finish line during the Olympics medal-winning race, he decides to stop running? Does he still become a champion? Of course not. The 1 millisecond that makes you a champion. For Usain Bolt, all the preparation and work in the world becomes pointless if he doesn't push all the way to that last millisecond when he crosses the finish line first. This is analogous to your life after this book. If you want to win in life, you can't stop just short of the finish line. The difference is, we aren't talking about a single win. We are talking about your participation in the arena of life, where every day can be a triumph. Each moment of each day truly can be a victory if you choose for it to be. Notice the importance of the word choose. You must choose to win or you never will. Which leads us into the third part of the flip formula, I initiating gratitude. This third step is where your mind and body start to become something different. It's the home stretch on the way to the figurative gold medal. The practice of initiating gratitude is what will flood your life with the light of possibility and hope and what ultimately leaves you victorious. It is also here that the symbolic flipping of the gratitude switch takes place. At this point in the formula, you've run a solid race so far. You found and isolated the frustrations, and then you looked for and found the awesome in each one. But the work is not over yet. Think of it this way. Let's say you walked into a large, dark room that held the key to your happiness somewhere within its obscured reaches. You reach your hand out to flip on the light switch, but at the last moment, you choose not to flip it. Instead, you remain shrouded in darkness, destined to walk around, bumping into walls and complaining about how impossible it is to navigate the room in the dark. You did everything necessary to bring you to the point in your life, but with your hand on the switch that holds the key to a better future, you choose not to exert that final bit of effort to illuminate the task and make everything brighter, better, and easier. It's the same as finding all the frustrations in your day, looking for what's awesome in them, but then stopping dead in your tracks. If you decide that the race ends there, you're missing that one small yet significant action that will enable your circumstances to change and allow you to become a champion every day. But what if, after you found the frustrations and looked for the awesome, you put your hand on the switch and then chose to exert the tiniest bit more effort to flip it? The room would be flooded with light, your route would be illuminated, and your success virtually guaranteed. Step 3 is the critical flip of the switch that turns gratitude from something into an action that will flood your day with life-giving light. In other words, this is the point at which you finalize your verbification of gratitude by physically expressing thanks. Eyes wide open. The tangible experience of gratitude is what makes all the difference. Without it, you're merely feeling thankful rather than participating in the full spectrum and glorious warmth of gratitude. Here's how step three works. Once you choose to flip the metaphorical switch, you begin to look around with your eyes open. After all the light in the world won't do you any good if you keep your eyes shut. It's important to note that we aren't talking about scanning your surroundings. You must look around internally. Your heart needs to receive the awesome you found in step two and disseminate that recognition and the feeling that accompanies it throughout your body. You take action on your list of awesome by triggering your body to literally feel the gratitude. There's a big difference between saying thank you and initiating and feeling gratitude. It's the kind of gratitude that Hal Elrod, author of the international bestseller The Miracle Morning and author of this book's foreword, calls soulful gratitude. Soulful gratitude, if you remember, is a real, tangible emotion that you can feel well up inside of you. It's a significantly more involved process than just thinking about being thankful. Soulful gratitude does not happen by accident. It takes conscious effort and a mindful application of the flip formula. After you find a frustration and look for what's awesome, you now have a list of things to be thankful for embedded inside any number of frustrations. By creating that list, you are essentially choosing to feel gratitude rather than experience the typical annoyance about one of life's frustrations. The frustration is still there! Okay, let me be clear. You gotta get this point, okay? The frustration is still there, but because you found the awesome in it, you are in essence feeling gratitude for the frustration itself. This process of initiating soulful gratitude is truly powerful and life-altering. As I mentioned in the last chapter, finding the awesome embedded within the frustrations of life is significantly harder. And that fact makes the practice of flipping the gratitude switch significantly more rewarding as a result. Why? Because you get stronger when you do harder things. In the same way your muscles grow stronger by lifting heavier weights, you are strengthening your gratitude muscles when you express gratitude for frustrations after you've located the awesome embedded in those frustrations. Look, anyone can say thanks. In fact, thank you has become a lot like I'm sorry, or the typical greeting, how are you? Sometimes we really mean these things. Other times, we say them out of obligation or habit. Saying the words thank you can never be a bad thing, but that alone does not make you a grateful person. Soulful gratitude, on the other hand, is the act of triggering real emotional gratitude that causes your soul to stir. The only way to trigger the eternal power of gratitude is to initiate it and feel it, and then express it outwardly by feeling it as you express it. You need to feel the words, not just say them. Why Thanksgiving stinks. Thanksgiving is all about thanks, right? I mean, come on, it's built right into the name. But when was the last time you really felt gratitude for each bite of turkey? As you shovel potatoes and gravy down your throat, do you think of those who have no food at all, much less a feast? As you devour a second slice of pumpkin pie, do you feel gratefulness wash over you as you realize how blessed you are in that exact moment? Thanksgiving has become a day when we merely give lip service to gratitude. And then there's the day after Thanksgiving. I'm always amazed by Black Friday, except now there's barely even a Black Friday anymore. Now it's more like Shadowy Thursday. Now, before our food has even had time to digest, even before the tryptophan and food coma has time to kick in, we race out to scoop up doorbuster deals before our neighbor can. Our meal of thanks has been converted to a delicious placeholder as a way to take up time before we can head out to beat the crowds. Selfishness tends to be the prevailing emotion, which is ironic since real gratitude breeds humility and tends to root out ego and selfishness. I can't fault the retailers. They're merely responding to the demands of the consumer. The problem here goes much deeper. There is a staggering lack of gratitude on a day dedicated to the giving of thanks. I like giving and receiving a good present on Christmas as much as the next guy, but should getting the deal really become more important than spending time with family on the day that's supposed to be dedicated to expressing gratitude for our families?
Oh, dinner was delicious, honey, but now I gotta go body check an old lady so I can save $100 on a flat screen TV. Hey, save me some pumpkin pie because, you know, saving money and yummy food is way more important than the relationship we share, so I'm out of here to get a deal. Bye!
Many families I know scatter out like hyenas to forage for the best deals at multiple stores. They leave other family members at home as they venture out to spend money they don't have on things they don't need, all while sacrificing precious time with the most important people in their world. Even when we do stay home, we eat as quickly as possible so we don't miss the big game. We spend our time complaining about an annoying family member or the pie that didn't turn out right. The kids whine about the food taking too long while we complain that our team isn't playing well. Or we peruse the Black Friday ads, all while we neglect the real sense of gratitude we ought to be having for our family and for the abundance in which we get to partake. You're not thankful or truly experiencing gratitude simply because you're celebrating a day that has the word thanks in it. You're only truly thankful when you take a moment to initiate and feel, I mean really feel, gratitude for the gifts of family and abundance. Here's a mini gratitude experiment for you. Allow me to show you how profound the difference can be between expressing gratitude and initiating and feeling gratitude. Here's what I want you to do. Go into your bathroom. Look at the mirror. That's right, walk in there, stare into your gorgeous eyes, and say the following words. Look, I'll give you a second. Go to the bathroom, keep me in your ears. Go to the bathroom, are you there yet? Look, I got all day, okay? If you need to pause it, pause it. Go to the bathroom, and here's what I want you to do. Stare into the mirror, look into those baby blues or baby browns or whatever color eyes you have, and say the following words. Thank you. Okay, so how'd it go? Did you feel good when you did it? I imagine it felt significantly better than if you looked in the mirror and said, "Forget you, weirdo." Okay, so if you did it, good job, you're an action taker. That's awesome. Now let's do something different. Now I want you to feel and experience more than just a simple thank you. So I want you to go back to your mirror and you're gonna do three things, okay? Hopefully you haven't left the mirror. If you're still standing there, awesome. Stand there in the mirror and you're gonna do three things, okay? Here's number one. First, look at yourself and consider how lucky you are to have a body that allows you to step up to the mirror and utter any words at all. Realize that many don't have such a gift, but you do. Become aware of your ability to perform this task by thinking of someone, a loved one who has passed perhaps, who does not have the blessing of standing in front of a mirror and uttering these words. Number two, close your eyes. And think of something that brings you joy. More joy than anything else in the world. If this was a Disney movie that I was watching with my kids, you might hear something like, think of the happiest thing. For me, I like to visualize my wife and children embracing me in a group hug as we all say in unison, family hug, which by the way is a thing that we do fairly often. So whatever it is for you, whether it's a warm beach, a good meal, your favorite spot in the forest, close your eyes and go there now. Take a moment and feel how awesome it is to be there. Let that warmth and goodness wash over you. Now here's step three. Open your eyes and look once more at your marvelous body as you think of your happy place or idea. Now look at yourself in the eyes again and say audibly and with emotion, thank you. I can't know what your reaction was or even if you conducted our little experiment here, but if you did, I will bet you a shiny nickel that the second thank you felt different from the first one. What you experienced the second time is how you initiate and express gratitude in a genuine, tangible, and lasting way. True gratitude must be actionable. In the book-turned-phenomenon known as The Secret, there's a practice that's described as vision boarding. It's the idea of making a board filled with pictures of things that you hope to have in your life. Then you put that board somewhere where you will see it often. This practice is supposed to activate the law of attraction and, in theory, begin to bring those things you want into your life. Although vision boarding can work, it is something that only works if you do more than stare at pictures all day.
Look, if all you do is look at a board all day without taking any action, then the power of the whole practice of vision boarding can never actually be activated. John Assaraf is a successful businessman in many ways, but he's perhaps best known for the story he shared in the movie The Secret, specifically about his personal experience with using a vision board. Here's an excerpt. He said, "I was getting ready to move. We put all the furniture, all the boxes into storage, and I made 3 different moves over a period of 5 years. And then I ended up in California and bought this house, renovated it for a year, and then had all the stuff brought from my former home 5 years earlier. One morning, my son Keenan came into my office, and one of the boxes that was sealed for 5 years was right at the doorstep. He asked, 'What's in the boxes, Daddy?' And I said, 'Those are my vision boards.' He then asked, 'What's a vision board?' I said, 'Well, it's where I put all my goals up. I cut them out, and I put all my goals up as something I want to achieve in my life.'